automatically tell them what growth stage the rice plant is at, so they can go and do something at a very local scale, but also do it for the entirety of Colombia, so we can give them a national scale of estimate of what yield prediction is going to be at the end of the season. And then we can look at it from an Australian perspective, where they're growing hundreds of thousands of hectares of cane. They know they've got to be harvesting and using trains, which are basically going across the landscape to pick produce up. How do you provide them with the logistical tools to maximise the harvest that is attainable? If you think about it, 50% of all crop that is ready for harvest never makes it to the consumer. That is frightening. You change that statistic around, we've got a bit of an answer. So from my perspective, we have to do more with less. And we have to work smarter, not harder. And that means using technology, but it also means changing farming practices and working with the guy on the ground. Because if you achieve all those three things that I started with, then actually you've really got a sustainable food security system. And you know, we can overcome these challenges. Because we have to be better. It's a fantastic thing to work in the ag sector because you are working in a very diverse but sector that means you have to you're working to have societal good, which is fantastic. And to be honest, never has the agricultural sector looked so attractive to other industries because of that exact reason. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So our final speaker before the panel session is Professor Andrew Coates. Andrew has, he was voted the best job title in the world, wasn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right.
Deputy Director for the Solar System.
You deserve for that power. Yes, the other Deputy Director is in charge of the rest of the universe.
Oh, I was not touring.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to you about exploration and exploitation of space, and concentrating really on why do we explore, how are we exploring, and how far we've got in the exploration of space, and also the exploitation. And here's a couple of missions which I'll talk about, which we're particularly involved in, with the ExoMars rover and also the JUICE mission. Just to say, the Mars Space Science Lab is is 50 years old this year. So celebrating its 50th year at Cornwall St Mary, but actually it traces its origins back to 1953, so actually before the space age started, so that's quite interesting. It's our website. So I'm going to talk a little bit first about the Outer Space Treaty itself, and so this has already been talked about by a number of people. So where this is associated with exploration, the exploration use of outer space for the benefit and the interest of all countries, and for the province of all mankind, free for exploration of use by all states, it's not subject to national appropriation. So really, it's the ones in red which are relevant to exploration as such. So this was mentioned before, the moon and other bodies should be used exclusively for peaceful purposes. Actually, astronauts should be regarded as the envoys of mankind. So as was mentioned before, this is seems to be the right framework that we need at the moment. So a bit about exploration and why do we explore. So we're interested in putting the Earth in context with the other planets, in understanding how the solar system formed, understanding why the Earth is so special, understanding more about the universe, and looking at the influences on the environment of the planets, for example, from the Sun. And actually one thing that hasn't been mentioned so far as a threat to exploration is actually space weather, and that's a very important part. We've talked about space debris quite a lot, but space weather is another key thing which limits exploration, actually. And mainly exploration really to understand our own place in the universe. How do we do it? So we use unmanned missions, which are here, so things like ExoMars, JUICE, Cassini, which finished this year in September, but also missions like CLSTR, Solar Orbiter, in the sort of space weather or science behind space weather arena, and then the James Webb Space Telescope in Euclid in astrophysics. And so these unmanned missions are how we're doing a lot of the exploration. And of course, with human exploration, the Apollo missions to the moon, Mir, the International Space Station, have all been mentioned. And of course, this was the famous plaque left on the lunar surface, "We came in peace for all mankind." I think that's very relevant for the Outer Space Treaty, although an American flag, of course, is there associated with that as well. And also in the future, the Deep Space Gateway. And so this is something which is proposed, perhaps, as a way forward for human exploration. So to look at some of the unmanned missions and what on Mars, for example, Mars was a very different place 3.8 billion years ago. That's far back in its history. 4.6 billion years is when the planets were all formed. So 3.8 billion years is quite a long time ago. So there's water on the surface. There was a magnetic field. This is some of the evidence for that from one of the missions, Mars Global Surveyor, showing the crustal magnetic fields which are left now on Mars. And that's the remnants of Mars having a magnetic field 3.8 billion years ago. So there's water on the surface, meaning there's a thick atmosphere and so on, potentially and the magnetic field sort of shielding that from harmful solar wind and also energetic particles from the galaxy and from the sun. The other big difference is that there was volcanism. So there's a water cycle, volcanism completing that, to be able to actually have water on the surface, a thick atmosphere. But since that magnetic field was lost 3.8 billion years ago, via a collision which caused this Hellas basin, probably, Mars has been unprotected and it's been losing its atmosphere gradually over time, over 3.8 billion years, so it's now you've got a very thin atmosphere. And so we're interested with Mars of could life have actually started at this time? So Mars now is very different, with extinct volcanoes, no large-scale magnetic field, only these crustal regions, very thin atmosphere, and it's very cold and dry. So what do we need for life? And this is relevant for the Mars questions. Liquid water, we need the essential elements, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus and sulfur. We need a source of heat and we need enough time for life to develop. So we think all of those were there on Mars 3.8 billion years ago. And so one of the things about exploration is going to Mars to actually find potential evidence for life 3.8 billion years ago. So one way we are doing that at UCL is with the ExoMars rover. So we're leading the team providing the PanCam, the panoramic camera system, which is at the top of the mast there. This will be providing the context for drilling. This rover will drill for the first time up to 2 meters underneath the surface of Mars to be able to look for signs of life. You have to do that to get below the ultraviolet, which penetrates through the thin atmosphere of Mars. Get below the oxidation level on the surface of Mars and also get below the radiation environment associated with space weather, which I mentioned earlier. And so we have a key instrument on there to be able to look at that. And this is a picture of it, actually. We're very proud of this. This is only 2 weeks ago when we had everything together in this camera system. So the wide-angle cameras, each of which has a filter wheel, and then this is the high-resolution camera here. And so we have it all together in the lab. Testing it at the moment. So future missions to Mars, and this comes up relevant for the Outer Space Treaty. So European Space Agency and Russia are working together. So the Trace Gas Orbiter is currently aerobraking around Mars and getting to smaller, to circularizing its orbit. So it will start its science looking at methane on Mars actually next year in about March. The ExoMars rover being launched in 2020. NASA had missions, so InSight in 2018, Mars 2020 as well. NASA has a rover mission there, going at the same time as the ExoMars rover. But our rover is unique in that it's drilling 2 meters underneath the surface to look for signs of life. Also very international, as we heard earlier, space, and so the United Arab Emirates have actually got a mission going to Mars in 2020 as well. That's an orbiter. China have an orbiter and a rover going in 2020. And then there's potentially others entering the frame, as we've heard, people like SpaceX. And so Elon Musk has an idea for colonizing Mars, which is very interesting. But I think we need to find the answer to the life question first. We'll come back to that. Okay, but Mars is not the only place in the solar system where we might potentially have life, so the Galilean satellites. So we have Europa and Ganymede here. Europa in particular has an icy crust with a subsurface ocean in contact with sand at the bottom of the ocean, so this is a very good possibility for life there. Ganymede, with its own magnetic field, again has the same protective properties against radiation that the Earth has. So we're going to be exploring that with the JUICE mission, so the Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer, which will be launched in 2022 and getting to Jupiter in 2030 and going to orbit around Ganymede in 2032. But it will do flybys of Europa as well, and so we will be looking at Europa and Ganymede in terms of potential habitats. So Also recently we've had the Cassini mission, so this is one of the spectacular images from Cassini. It's an eclipse picture of Saturn which lights up the rings here, in particular the E-ring. This is the thing which includes Enceladus, so Enceladus has plumes of material coming away from it, and that's a very important source for the Saturn system. But this picture is remarkable, because we not only see Saturn lit up spectacularly, but also Mars and Venus. And in one picture, the Earth and the Moon are in that picture. Actually, we all went out and waved at the time that picture was being taken. Of course, we're only one pixel, so you can't see us, but nonetheless, it's exciting. So Saturn, Moon, Titan, and Enceladus are potential places for studying processes associated with life. So Titan has prebiotic chemistry going on at the top of the atmosphere. We had a paper earlier this year about that. And then Enceladus, with its plumes and subsurface ocean there, is another potential place for life. So we've looked in detail at that chemistry, and I won't go into detail about that particular picture. But Enceladus is exciting because it has plumes, obviously water coming out from the subsurface ocean. It has sodium. That's interesting because that's perhaps indicating a subsurface ocean. A salty ocean. So sodium chloride, sodium is detected there. Silicates, and that indicates that maybe there are subsurface vents, i.e. hydrothermal vents, happening underneath the surface of Enceladus. And also, just this year, hydrogen was detected. So that's one of those key habitability elements which we mentioned earlier. And so Enceladus has sort of come to the fore. So Enceladus, Europa, and Mars are now really prime targets for looking at life. Titan is also interesting with this prebiotic chemistry going on. It's the only moon in the solar system which has a significant atmosphere, and it's a nitrogen and methane atmosphere. Okay, so some wonderful travel pictures for the future about Titan and Enceladus. So here's Titan, ride the tides through the fruit of Kraken, it says. And the Kraken is one of the lakes on Titan. Is in Solus with another travel poster. Okay, so lots of interesting results in the last few years, and just drawing out Pluto and Charon as potentially interesting places as well. There's a link there actually with the processes happening at Titan. So this reddish material which you see is to do with what's called tholins. That's what we see at Titan as well. So this nitrogen and methane produce very complex organic substances. We saw that at the top of the atmosphere with our instrument, a very heavy negative ions, which are the source of this material, at Pluto as well. So that's interesting, just a couple of other wonderful exploration images about Pluto. So missions really looking for habitable conditions of the future. So the ExoMars 2020 rover, the JUICE mission, also NASA has the Europa Clipper and the Europa Lander potentially to do that. So we have a scientific imperative really to gain answers to the question about whether life exists anywhere else in the universe, before sending potentially contaminating missions, such as taking people. Okay, so I think we'll skip this one, but it's basically about the current and planned robotic exploration. You can see the objects in the solar system and some of the missions which are planned to go. You can see there's actually some gaps as well, so with Uranus and Neptune. In the future, we're interested in looking at life elsewhere in the solar system. I think probably likely places for life are, as we said, Mars, so 3.8 billion years ago. There's a possibility in Europa, and there's a possibility in Enceladus. So I think these are the sort of top three candidates in the solar system for looking for life elsewhere. Of course, that's not all we're doing in exploration. So planetary exploration, really, one can consider this as having three phases. So there's initially doing flybys, secondly having an orbiter mission, third a lander, and four a sample return of some kind. And so with Mercury, for example, we've got the stage one, and future missions, so the European Space Agency has BepiColombo, Colombo, which will be launched fairly soon to get there in 2025. Venus, there are currently no planned missions, but there have been missions in the past to do various things. In fact, we've got to the point of landing, of course, with the Russian missions on Venus. At Mars, there are lots of future missions, as one can see here. So the ExoMars 2020 rover, of these, is the most likely to find biosignatures and signs of life on the surface. a very exciting mission to be involved with that one. Jupiter, so these are the planned future missions. So again, the ESA JUICE mission and NASA Europa Clipper, this is the stage we have got to. With Saturn, there are no planned future missions at the moment. We've Cassini basically finished in mid-September this year, and there are missions which are proposed for the future, but none of which have actually been selected yet. But there's three big, Uranus, Neptune, there's no plans for future exploration of those, but it is something which one would want to do to be able to complete the exploration of the solar system. And then if we look at the Sun and small objects, so the Earth magnetosphere, the future mission there is the European Space Agency SMILE mission. That's actually co-led by Graziella Brandwadi-Raymond and also with China. That's a joint mission with China. We have many missions which are currently ongoing and providing fantastic data about Earth's magnetosphere and to get the science behind space weather and to understand the interaction of the solar wind with the Earth. In the future, for the Sun and the solar wind, we have the European Space Agency Solar Orbiter mission, the NASA Parker Solar Probe, and so those will be looking at the solar wind. At comets, a lot of exploration has been done so far. Of course, the Rosetta mission recently came to an end as well. And in terms of future exploration, the only thing actually planned at the moment is the New Horizons mission, which is going onto a Kuiper Belt object from having looked at Pluto. At asteroids, we've got to stage four with that, with actually bringing samples back. And again, there are a number of future missions associated with asteroids here. And then with the Moon, Chandrayaan 2 and China have planned missions, and there's also potentially the Deep Space Gateway. So we've got a reasonable distance with the exploration. And then extrasolar planets, there are a number of missions there. So ESA has the Plato mission and CHEOPS, NASA the TESS mission, astrophysics, again, there are a number of missions there. So there's lots of exploration going on in different fields, as well as people looking, of course, back at the Earth, as we heard in the previous talk. So exploration, how far have we got? So the initial exploration of many objects in the solar system has happened with non-crewed missions. The Apollo missions and low Earth orbit have been explored by humans, but that's as far as we've gone with humans so far. Then we're starting now, as was mentioned earlier, with non-governmental exploration, which is very interesting. So the Google Lunar XPRIZE, for example, which is, I think some of this is planned for launch next year. And SpaceX and Elon Musk with pronunciations about Mars colonization. As I say, we'd like to understand the answer to the question, was there life on Mars, before we start with that. Okay, so exploitation, very briefly. So why are we interested in exploitation of space? Obviously, global coverage is something which we can do very nicely from space, which is much more difficult to do from the ground, and lots of business opportunities, as we've heard in other talks as well. How do we do exploitation? Well, developing the technology first, but a number of different fields, of course, meteorology, as we've seen Meteosat images earlier on as well, but remote sensing of the Earth, telecommunications, navigations, military, these are all really good examples of how we can exploit space and how we do exploit the space and the region in the Earth. Manned exploration is another exploitation of that with, we heard about that earlier, in particular the sort of inspirational aspects of that, which were very visible during the Tim Peake mission in the UK. And then, potentially for exploiting other objects, mining. So this is where the Outer Space Treaty starts to come in to be interesting. So far, I think all the studies have shown that mining is really, certainly with helium-3 on the moon, the studies show that that is, which potentially could be a source for nuclear fusion on Earth. That is something which is very on the limit as to whether that is going to be financially wise, whether it will actually be efficient to be able to do it that way. And then, as been mentioned already, space debris removal. So these are potential things. So how? That's how. And then how far have we got with these things? Of course, we have weather satellites. We have things which look at land use, as we heard, climate change. A lucrative communications market and a very large activity in the UK industry in this area. GPS and Galileo, another launch of Ariane 5 last night successfully with three Galileo satellites on board. There's only one launch left to actually complete that constellation, I believe. And so that is something which is one of the things which we've achieved in addition to the GPS. So surveillance and arms monitoring is another key use of space. In terms of where have we got with human exploration, so the moon in 69 to 72 and low Earth orbit, that's as far as we have got with human exploration. In terms of the mining, Luxembourg has a big interest in this and have led some studies which are quite exciting. In terms of space debris, removed debris is a mission which is planned for launch in 2018. So sorry, satellites are working on that. So there's a lot of things going on in space exploration, a lot of important topics, and I will stop there. Thank you very much.
You justified your title very well there, thank you very much. So that's the end of the speakers. Now I invite Saeed to gather the panel together.
Yes, for a panel. Yes. Perhaps we can get some chairs up here who did the sessions, Mark.
So speakers ahead, yes.
Take opportunity.
Yes.